This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Was a good new year. Big Michigan win on Tuesday night. Overtime. Sugar Bowl champions.
Very exciting. Is that why you're wearing your Ohio State colors today?
I knew that was coming.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, a woman who is surging in the GOP polls at just the right moment, Daniela Fairchild.
Good to be here, Mike.
So, Daniela, you really did time it right. I mean, granted, most of the country doesn't know who you are, but that doesn't matter because you've got time certainly before the South Carolina and the Florida primaries.
Exactly. You know, I've been biding my time, but, you know, it's game on now.
Game on. I like that. Well said. So, it's fun political season again. Just one candidate after another likes to surge and then fall. And what do you think? Is it going to be Mitt Romney in the end?
I think it's got to be. I mean, he's the only one who stayed reasonably up there throughout. You know, he's been pretty consistent. Yeah. And
yeah, I mean, look, sometimes I think, look, this is just the press desperately wants a story beyond, okay, it's a given, it's going to be Mitt Romney. And so they like to have all these ups and downs be part of the narrative. Speaking of narrative, actually, not a great segue, but speaking of something exciting, we have a new website at Fordham.
That is true. It's been a year in the making, and it looks great.
No, this is great. Look, what we're trying to do with the website is it's a new look, sleek, modern, et cetera, which is, these websites, they need an update every couple of years, freshen them up. But also, other exciting things, we have decided to break up the Flypaper blog into six separate blogs. We're keeping Flypaper. That's going to be mostly for me and for Checker to opine on. But now we have some subject-specific blogs. We've got Stretching the School Dollar with Chris Tassoni, talking about how to do more with less. We've got Common Core Watch with Kathleen Porter McGee. We've got Board's Eye View with Peter Meyer, ba-bum ching, talking about school boards and governance issues. And then we have Choice Words, which is going to be launched soon as we hire our new school choice czar. And then, of course, a special blog for our Ohio team, the Ohio Education Gadfly Daily. So lots of exciting content out there for people. And for you podcast listeners, get this, our own dedicated page for the podcast. Now, what are some of the things, Daniela, that you are going to be able to find there at that podcast page?
Oh, there's all sorts of good stuff. You can listen to the full podcast, or if you're an Amber Winkler buff and you just want to listen to the Research Minute, you can do that as well. We pulled out all the bits of the podcast.
Hey, I want you to know that Rick and I were against this change because we're very concerned that most of you will go ahead and take that option and we'll never be listened to again.
You guys have some followers, I promise.
But you know what? We have to embrace change, Daniela.
Right. You can also join the podcast conversation. So if there's something that you want to comment on, there are comments on the week's edition on the blog. And then you can also search all of the 6 years of podcast content that we have. There are 250 plus episodes.
Can you believe that?
That is crazy.
People wondered if this was going to last or not. And the truth is, we've made it last because Rick and I like getting together this week. And, because of you listeners, we're hanging in there. So the theme this week, Daniela, is embrace change. We're going to mix some things up on the podcast, try some new things, including this week doing a special New Year's edition of the podcast rather than playing Pardon the Gadfly, as Rick and I usually do, or as I do sometimes with guest hosts like you. We have a special interview with none other than Diane Ravitch. We taped this interview back in December about what she thinks 2012 will hold for education policy.
Today I'm speaking with Diane Ravitch in the lobby of Washington's Marriott Wardman Hotel, where Diane is here to give a talk. Diane, thanks for joining us on this special edition of the Education Gadfly Show podcast.
Great to be back with you, Mike.
Yeah. So, very simple question. We're speaking right now, it's December, it's towards the end of the year. I'm curious about your vision for 2012. 2011 had a lot of, you can say victories or defeats, depending on your perspective. A lot of school reforms passed at the state level. Republicans in charge got a lot of things done on vouchers and merit pay and teacher valuations and testing and accountability. What do you see happening in 2012?
I think that there's probably going to be more of the same because there are so many Tea Party governors are running states now. But I think there's going to be increasing pushback. I'm doing everything I can to encourage the pushback and to kind of make the public aware and that the evidence is overwhelmingly opposed to all the things that are happening. That after 21 years of vouchers in Milwaukee, the poor black kids in Milwaukee are scoring on par with poor black kids in Mississippi, whether they're in public schools, in voucher schools, or in charter schools. That the charter movement, as it expands, the quality is not going to go up because there's so few high-performing charter schools, and that if that study after study, even from studies supported by the conservative Walton Foundation, show that charters don't get better results than regular public schools. And at some point, the public is going to wake up. Maybe it'll be 2012, maybe it'll be 2013. I think you're going to see the kind of thing that happened in Ohio, where 60% of the voters pushed back when Governor Kasich went too far. I think that when people understand that they're going to lose their public schools, you're going to see even more pushback. So as all of these initiatives that you describe hit the ground, there'll be more and more pushback. I think one great example of this is in New York State, where New York State got race to the top money, and now we have a principal's revolt against the teacher evaluation. The principals are saying the teacher evaluation that the state agreed to is going to demoralize their staff, tear them apart, fragment them. We don't want this. In Long Island, which is a politically very important part of the state, Nassau County, Suffolk County, 75% of the principals have signed on to the petition of protest, and it's now spreading to upstate. So I think we'll see more people saying, we don't want this. I met with one of the regents the other day, and he said, boy, am I sorry we took that race to the top money. It's going to cost us more to implement than the money that we're getting from the federal government. And he said, this is truly a pig in a poke.
How do you think this is going to play out in the presidential election?
Well, since there probably is going to be very little difference in education policy between the Republicans and the Democrats, I think that one of the sad things about the Obama administration is they did adopt the Republican agenda. They are as much into testing, accountability, and choice as the Republicans are, as witnessed by the fact that Newt Gingrich and Arne Duncan campaigned together on behalf of Race to the Top. So I don't think there's a huge difference other than the fact that there are some Republicans who are saying abolish the Department of Education, which is not going to happen.
Do you think teachers will get behind Barack Obama in the fall?
I think that perhaps Barack Obama's biggest vulnerability is that teachers might sit home, even though he will certainly have the endorsement of the NEA, which he already has, and certainly have the endorsement of the AFT. I think they're going to have a hard time turning their members out unless there's some serious change in the administration's policy between now and the election, which I don't anticipate. But I think that one of the reasons why the president or the Democratic Party took, as he put it, such a shellacking in the 2010 state elections was that so many teachers just sat home. They didn't feel inspired to come out given the beating that they were getting from the Obama administration.
Okay. Diane, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.
So, Daniela, look, I think she makes some interesting points. I certainly don't agree with her characterization of the charter school research. Of course, I don't agree with her on more or less anything on policy. But this point about teachers and the 2012 elections and whether or not they're going to sit it out, what's your take? Do you think teachers are going to come around in the end and rally for Barack Obama?
I mean, that's a really good question. I think, you know, we forget that teachers are people too. You know, they definitely care a lot about education policy, but they're going to, you know, things about the economy, things about healthcare, about everything else also weigh on them and their families. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if they really are going to turn away from the polls. You know, this again, it sort of, I think who is picked for the GOP nominee will really affect whether they roll out in favor of Obama, or if, you know, if it's not a surge against the GOP nominee, they might very well, you know, sit back and say, you know, in terms of Obama versus Romney, there may not be much difference.
No, so, but you make a great point. I mean, that this election's not going to be about education, right? It's going to be about jobs and the economy and the future of the country. And you know, the question is, you know, most people, when they tell pollsters, you know, why they voted the way they voted, education lately has been very low on their list. And I think you're right that even for educators, education might be low on the list. Heck, I'm an education policy wonk, and I'm not sure that my vote will be even remotely about education come the fall. Now, this other point she makes is about this coming backlash. And here is, again, another important question. I mean, has the administration, with its changes on NCLB and the flexibility and the waivers, you know, is that going to do enough to kind of simmer down the concern around testing and accountability that we're going to thwart that backlash that she thinks is going to happen?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I think the waivers are going to be helpful to states and to state policymakers, but to I think the trickle down to districts will be long enough in coming that they won't necessarily feel that big sigh of relief, that big reprieve from these accountability measures. And even the waivers are still, still ask states to hold districts and schools accountable, maybe not through NCLB mandates, but through some other method. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be a big loosening, I think, on the district and
school
level.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have to see. I mean, the trick is the public still says that they favor accountability in theory, but when you get down to specifics like, do you like testing? Do you like merit pay? Do you like firing teachers? They generally don't. So this is where we're going to have to see. And, really, it's going to be parents. Do parents have the sense that their schools are being turned into testing factories, or does some of those concerns go away? We're just going to have to see. And look, parents make up a smaller and smaller portion of the electorate, and so citizens as a whole, taxpayers, are they even paying attention? We'll see what 2012 holds. The backlash so far has been a small but vocal group of people out there marching on Washington and hitting the blogosphere. Haven't seen it really go mainstream yet. Time will tell. All right. Next up is everybody's favorite. This one we haven't changed. Amber Winkler's Research Minute. Amber, welcome to the first show of 2012.
Thank you so much. A little chilly out to start the year, but we're hanging in there.
That's why they call it January.
Yes. Bought some new earmuffs.
Hey, how was your New York City sojourn?
Very nice, but sad. I saw the 9/11 memorial. Mm. And I don't know if our listeners have seen it, but the water goes down a big, deep, dark black hole in the middle of the memorial. So it's sobering when you look at it. You really get a sense of the tragedy and the loss of life.
Wow. Beautiful.
So.
All right. Well, Amber, we talked earlier about how the podcast now is set up on the podcast page at edexcellence.net in a way that listeners can just click the part of the podcast they want to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very worried that now you're just going to steal the entire audience for yourself.
Yeah, we'll see.
This is the most popular minute of the education podcast, really any education podcast around. So let's get to it. What do you got for us?
There are so many other education podcasts. Anyway, this week we have a new study out by the Center for Ed Reform, education reform, mind you, sets out to prove that charter schools do close, that they are successful, and that accountability is alive and well in the charter sector. Analysts report that of every charter school that's ever opened since 1992, that's about 6,700 of them, about 1,036, or about 15%, have closed. Analysts report that financial problems were the number one cause of closure. About 41%. Mismanagement was about 24%. Unacceptable academic performance, 18%. Yet we know that these reasons are typically related and they bleed together, so that's kind of hard to parse. They also don't prove that charters are being held accountable, since few closures presumably happened as a result of authorizers or lawmakers shutting them down. And a little plug for our report last year, Immortal Schools, I think was part of the title that you can search it for.
Our bad schools immortal.
Okay. We basically showed that 72% of low-performing charter schools remained in operation and remain low-performing 5 years later versus 80% of district schools. So we basically ended up saying, the charter sector does a slightly better job than the traditional sector of eliminating low-performing schools, but it does not post a dramatically higher rate, as CER says in their report. Mm-hmm. So...
first of all, I want to say that, this disdain you show for our titles, Amber, it's really
That's
upsetting.
Right.
It's about the only thing I do around here anymore. I host the Gadfly show, and I help come up with titles.
Yeah, but then we shorten them around here, that.
All
we
right.
have little thumbnail titles. But
all right,
anyway.
Right, so Center for Education Reform is trying to say that because there's so many of these schools that have closed, ergo, there is accountability, because public schools almost never close. Is that basically what they're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. But it is true that increasingly urban public schools do close because they've got shrinking enrollment in these districts. And so there has been actually increasing numbers of consolidations of late, partly because the kids are going to charter schools.
Right. But it's not accountability, right? It's just life, circumstance,
right.
consequence.
Changing demographics.
Yeah.
That's right. Yes. So if you want to get at accountability, our report is the one to look at.
Yeah, although we don't really get into the reasons why they close either, just to be fair.
Well, that's true. We don't know why they went away.
Right. We don't know. Yeah. We just know that the rates are different, but we can't really say it's because some grand accountability is happening. Somebody's shutting them down. Somebody's cracking the whip. We just don't know that.
But don't you think, I mean, Daniela, what do you think? I mean, you could also argue, though, there's a different kind of accountability, which is to the parents, and that a lot of these schools, what happens is they are not doing well by a variety of measures, and the parents leave. And they vote with their feet, and then the finances go downhill. So they may close for financial reasons, but that's really because of enrollment reasons, and that's really because of quality reasons. So it's just another accountability mechanism.
Parent accountability,
Yep, well, and like that's, I mean, charters close on the school level, whereas district schools might close because parents move out of a neighborhood, or so it's not, that's a reflection of potentially the entire urban community, whereas parents moving with their, you know, choosing to close schools with their feet, so to speak, you know, that's charter specific.
Mm. Parent power, Amber.
Yes. Parent power. I like it. But just not to be all negative about the report, they actually did mention Ohio's death penalty and cracking down on authorizers, which we've also said in the past are smart moves to make in terms of, you know, cracking the whip. So anyway, there's some good stuff in there, as I want to say.
All right. So CER is a little glasses half full versus our glasses half empty.
Yes.
Okay. Now, Amber, usually at this point in the program, we segue into some song that has to do with what you've been talking about. But since we have exhausted the entire catalog of songs that could possibly be related
every
to school reform.
Every song.
And then some, right? We've decided, in the spirit of embracing change for 2012, we're going to try something new.
Yes.
And instead of the songs, we have a new feature in its place. Why don't you tell us about it?
It is going to be a little factoid. It's going to be a poll. It's sort of a question, and we want our listeners
like
to go.
Like a pop quiz?
Like a pop quiz. Could be a pop quiz, but we don't have a name for it, actually. So that's part of my plea here today, is to have our listeners go on our website and give it a name. But it's basically going to be a question, and it's going to have multiple answers, multiple choice question, and you guys are going to basically tell us what you think. But there's no name, so if you could go to our website, which is edexcellence.net/podcast, and help us with names, we would greatly appreciate it.
Yes. Are you smarter than an education policy?
I like it. Mm-hmm. I like
Something
it.
Like that. Amber Winkler's factoid of the week.
Factoid of the week. Anything that uses my name may get bonus points.
Winkler's weekly pop quiz.
Mm-hmm.
I'll keep working on it, but we need our listeners to help us too.
Yes.
Okay, so this one, that the inaugural edition of whatever we're going to call it.
All right. So on average, I want listeners to think about how much does your local high school principal make? Mm. All right. How much does your local high school principal make? Would it be A, $65,200, B, $80,400, C, $90,100, or D, $98,300? What do we think? Anyway, we're not going to tell you this week. You're going to have to find it on our website at edexcellence.net/podcast, and we are going to tell you the results on next week's show.
Intriguing. Hey, by the way, point out, this was from data 3 years ago.
Okay. Oh, so, that's right. Sorry. 07, 08.
Yes. So you have to be able to calculate inflation in your head at the same time.
Yes. And don't cheat and go to the condition of education. We do not
don't
want
tell
you
them where they went back. All right. We're going to look for that. Cheaters out there. All right. And Danielle and I will have to make a guess next week, too.
Yep.
I'm pondering.
Okay, good.
I'm pondering. I sure hope it's not that $65,000 number. How depressing would that be?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Amber. Thanks for joining us. Now it's time for Chris Irvine's What's Up With That?
Woke up this morning and I got out of bed. Had a big old cup of coffee to clear my head. Telephone rang and you wanna chat? Well, sit on down and tell me what's up with that. What's up with that? Yes, sir.
Happy New Year.
Thank you, Mike. It's good to be here, and it was a good New Year. Big Michigan win on Tuesday night, overtime, Sugar Bowl champions. It's a big deal.
It's very exciting. Is that why you're wearing your Ohio State colors today?
I knew that was coming.
Every winter this happens. Chris has this very attractive red sweater that has some gray stripes in them. And I'm sorry, it looks exactly like an Ohio State fan would wear. And by the way, around the office, we call Chris Woody, just to needle him, because, of course, the famous coach from Ohio State. What was his name? Woody?
Woody Hayes.
Woody Hayes, yes.
Woody Hayes.
He also looks a little bit like Woody from Toy Story.
Just a little.
I mean, what about the Woody from Cheers?
No. Much more like the cowboy from Toy Story.
All right. Okay. Hey, it's 2012. We're excited. Maybe you're going to have a story for us that's not just about religious liberty in the holidays.
Well, that was great.
Well, my favorite thing about the new year, if you couldn't have guessed already, is the gluttony of sports on television. There's nothing better than parking it on the couch and watching championship football. But while many teams this season get to celebrate, like our Wolverines, doing just that cost one Boston high school team a state title. While running for what would have been the go-ahead touchdown with little time left on the clock, Cathedral High School quarterback Matthew Owens briefly raised his left arm and then lowered it as he approached the end zone. Unfortunately for Cathedral, the referee threw a flag, penalizing them for violating the rule prohibiting players from celebrating or taunting while scoring a touchdown. The penalty nullified the touchdown, and Cathedral lost the game 16-14. Are you kidding me? What's up with that? The video of Owen's touchdown is out there, and I've watched it several times, and what he did can hardly qualify as celebration, let alone taunting. He was living the dream that every young football player fantasizes about while playing in the backyard, scoring the game-winning touchdown to capture the state championship. And yet, he's not even allowed to enjoy it? Are we sure this game is being played in Massachusetts and not North Korea? Even the mayor of Boston rallied for Cathedral, saying that he thinks rules like this one were written by frustrated athletes. I'm thinking the authors are more along the lines of overprotective parents with too much time on their hands, but the point is moot. The rule is the rule. No showing emotion of any kind while competing. While we're at it, let's give every kid a trophy and stop keeping score, because we wouldn't want anyone's feelings to get hurt now, would we?
Wow. No, first of all, I saw this, and this is shocking. It's ridiculous. I mean, I thought in college and pro ball that at least that it's more like, you know, they tack on some extra yardage to the next kickoff or something. But taking away the touchdown altogether, you know, around here at Fordham, we often raise our left arms in celebration, you know? We're like, oh my God, that blog post just hit 20 tweets. Yes! You know, Checker just got quoted in the New York Times. Yeah! You know, and we're proud. It's part of the morale around here. I just think it's ridiculous that they can't do this sort of thing.
You know, maybe the Cathedral coach could take a page out of Fordham's playbook and get a celebratory bell that they could ring on the sideline anytime.
Would that be allowed? I don't know if you're allowed to do that.
I don't know. Probably not in high school sports anymore.
Now we often talk about this in high school sports, and, you know, people don't like competition, making people feel bad, but this is something else entirely. I mean, you know, the emotional intelligence folks, you know, the Howard Gardner types and the progressives, you know, should be upset about this, because what they're saying is athletes are not allowed to show emotion. I mean, what kind of lesson does that send? Huh? I mean, that's not good for emotional development, for emotional intelligence, for creating, you know, socially and emotionally wise people.
No, they're supposed to be zombies out there and, you know, acting in fair and competitive performance at all times. And, you know, you're not allowed to get excited about doing something well.
What is this, poker?
Maybe they should institute that at the high school level.
Yeah. So there's a lot of pressure being brought on this referee and on this decision. Any chance this can be overturned?
Nope. There's no precedent for going back and overturning a call of an official. They've already ruled on it. And unfortunately for Cathedral, they're state champion runner-ups.
Wow. Well, to Cathedral High School, we raise our left arm to you. Okay, well, this is a good way to start the new year, Chris. Keep them coming. Till then, hey, everybody, check out the new edexcellence.net. Check out especially the podcast page at edexcellence.net/podcast. Use the comment section to tell us what you think. And please tell your friends about the Education Gadfly Show. Okay, until next time.
I'm Daniela Fairchild.
And I'm Mike Petrilli at the Education Gadfly Show, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.